Good morning, Mr. Ruth. Thank you for being here and being willing to go through the interview process. Appreciate that very much. In just a minute, we'll have you make an opening statement. And before then, when you're finished, or before that, too, if you have any questions. And then we'll open it up for questions from this group. And about 5 minutes left in our time together, I'll give you the opportunity to make some closing statements as well. So, again, thanks so much for being here. The floor is yours now.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity, and I appreciate all you're doing. I'll try to cover each of the areas that were suggested in the materials that you sent out to us. I'm married. My wife, Janet Robert, is with me today. I have two children, Alex and Alicia, whose mother, Darlene, was also a Minnesota legislator, and I think many of you knew her, sadly passed away 13 years ago. I grew up on a family dairy farm in Minnesota. My parents, and most likely many of yours, taught us that with hard work, discipline, sacrifice, we could grow up to be anything we wanted to be. And I have always felt that our family would not have thrived without the incredible opportunity to attend the University of Minnesota, paid for by our fellow citizens. There, at the U, I received both of my degrees, my Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from the Institute of Technology, and then my JD degree from the University Law School. My two brothers graduated with U degrees in Economics and in Law, and my sister, who was the fourth of the four of us in the family, graduated from the University of Minnesota Medical School. After clerking for the federal court and practicing law at the Dorsey Law Firm in Minneapolis, I went into public service with a deep appreciation for what government had meant for our family, creating opportunities we could have never imagined. Along the way, I had, of course, enormous help from my family, friends, and supporters. I had the distinct privilege of serving in the Minnesota legislature for 20 years, over a decade as the Senate Assistant Majority Leader, and on the Senate Finance Committee and the Conference Committees on State Budget. I was also appointed to the Board of Directors of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission and served there for 6 years as we built Minnesota's amateur facilities around the state from the ground up. I then had the privilege of serving for 8 years in the United States Congress. I was a regional caucus leader there and on the committees on science, small business, and international relations. I also served on the Energy and Commerce Committee, which has jurisdiction not only over business, but also over the environment and health care issues. Throughout my public service, I worked across party lines, the Minnesota way, as I always called it, on a number of positive proposals for the people of our country. Examples would be working with Congressman Jim Ramsden on consumer product safety and working with Congressman Gil Gutnicht on budget reform issues. In the past 12 years since leaving public office, I've engaged in a variety of consulting activities, ranging from working with businesses on reducing line items in their budgets to mediating business conflicts at former Minnesota Supreme Court Justice Gilbert's Mediation Center, located in Eden Prairie. I've handled major fiduciary responsibilities in my life to the highest of standards, learned from my days actually at the Dorsey Law Firm. I've worked on state and federal budgets, as well as smaller budgets on my own business and the Amateur Sports Commission. I also worked on a bipartisan basis in Congress for balancing the budget, receiving the highest marks from the Concord Coalition for Cutting Waste in Government. I supported the issues of equity and diversity through being a member of Minnesota's Council on the Economic Status of Women and my support of those minority councils that we fund through the state government. On the International Relations Committee in Congress, a top priority of mine was making microcredit loans available to the poorest people in the world so they could provide for their families. Back home, I personally conducted numerous college application seminars for students around my congressional district. I believe the constructive team-building approach I used in public office and now in business and mediation would serve you and the Board of Regents well. I don't think it's any one experience or expertise that qualifies me, but rather broad life experience, common sense, independent judgment that I hopefully could bring to the job. I come from both a rural and metro perspective, spending lots of time back home on our family farm and with friends there in agriculture, manufacturing, and the arts. I have a cross-section of experiences, a focus on setting policy, not micromanaging, and a concern for all areas of education essential to our economy, from engineering to ag, health sciences, and the arts and research. I have no bias or agenda other than wanting the U to be the very best that it can be. I know you want to differentiate the candidates, so besides my budget work over the years, I'll highlight just a few specific examples of my work that are relevant to the U. 20 years ago, with the help of our Attorney General staff, I was able to pass the law requiring the disclosure of payments from drug companies to doctors, first in the nation. Now a sunshine law adopted nationwide. 12 years ago, with bipartisan help, I was able to raise the profile of net neutrality issue in a tie vote in the House Commerce Committee. And as I mentioned in my application, with lots of support from others, I initiated the first bipartisan GAO study on rising tuition costs in this country. I mention these examples only because I believe strongly that good governance requires taking on difficult issues. After we become well-informed, analyze issues, weigh the options, the tough challenge is then exercising the judgment to make progress on tough issues and to do it in a completely constructive, collegial way. This is what I've tried to do over the years, and I'd like to do the same for the Board of Regents. Which finally brings me to why I'd like to serve as a regent. I'm interested in giving back to the university that's meant so much to me, my family, and all of the people of our state. In fact, every chance I've had in my life, whether through the GAO tuition study or my meetings around my district for high school students, I've shown my commitment to access and affordability for all of the citizens of our state. When I hear of any stories that don't reflect well on the U, it literally hurts to the core. I think of the wonderful work being done by the Alumni Center and the impact Noblesse has on the public support and fundraising from U graduates, and I want to be a positive force for making our great university even greater for the people of Minnesota. At the end of the term, I think I'll have a pretty good idea if I was successful and effective. Did I help the board face up to difficult issues? Did we make progress on affordability and access? Did we improve the university during my term? Thanks so much. I'll be glad to try to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Harriet.
Sure. I'm going to start the line of questioning around diversity. You, as an over 40 white male, are about as far opposite from the diverse population of Minnesota and the nation that exist today. I heard you say something really interesting in your opening remarks around microfinancing, and I'd like to probe that a little bit deeper and tie that to your approach and philosophy around diversity and how that would apply, how you would link that as a member of the Board of Regents and help the university.
Sure. Thank you for the question. Microcredit, as I think.
Microcredit, I'm sorry.
That's fine. What you're referring to me, that was just a clear issue for me to get involved in the United States Congress, because you were talking about the poorest people in the world having the same feelings we have to try to improve themselves and improve their lives. And so what that program does is it's not a handout. It's giving them just the beginning money to start making money for their family. It might be in basket weaving. It might be starting a garden. It might be just the most basic things you can imagine. Some of the loans are $50, as small as that. And it gets them started so that they can provide food and opportunity for their family. It was extremely exciting program. Most of the recipients are women, quite frankly, because the experience was that men oftentimes waste the money, to be very candid with you. So it was just a terrific program. I supported it strongly, held a hearing on the issue, and did everything I could to promote that particular issue. That's just one of the examples of things I've done on diversity in my life because of my commitment to it. There, of course, are all kinds of forms of diversity. I mean, if we're talking about gender diversity, I served on our Economic Status of Women Council in Minnesota, which over the years has done a terrific job to raise the profile of that issue. And in terms of the University of Minnesota, of course, the regents are moving forward on a sexual violence issue. We should have no tolerance, of course, for sexual violence, and we should take the steps necessary to achieve that so that women can not only be completely safe on campus, but in society in general. On ethnic and economic diversity, I have a strong track record of encouraging it, from the microcredit we talked about to the minority councils that I supported over the years. How it relates to the university is that I believe it comes down to the number one thing is affordability of tuition. The cost of tuition is much more serious for people for minorities and people that are economically disadvantaged, and that's one of the reasons that we have to watch that tuition so carefully. Minorities and lower economic people also do not have the same access to the information on resources. That's why I held my seminars. They would literally be crowded rooms with people coming in trying to learn about how their child could maybe become the first person in their family to get a college education. It was just extremely rewarding. And also, of course, if we're talking about minorities now in terms of graduation, they only have a 50-50 chance of graduating, and that's why we need more flexibility in how we provide education. We need more outreach, and I was very happy to see the governor and others focusing now on what we can do in our K-12 system to prepare our economically disadvantaged and our minority students so that they can not only get into college but then be successful in college. There's also, of course, geographical diversity too, but I'll hold that. Maybe that's maybe not where you were going. Hopefully that's answered your question.
That is more than an answer to my question. Thank you very much.
Margaret.
Well, first, as former head of the Alumni Association, you were one of the most proud ambassadors for the university, both in D.C. and in Minnesota, and I wanted to publicly thank you before I ask my question. It's very clear what you've done in your professional career. I have a bias, however, when I look at resumes and I see a title of Governing Board Experience, because I pull out of that anything that related to your public service. I have with every candidate, it's not just you, and I do see the Amateur Sports Commission, which to me is authentic board governance, not related to employment. What else have you done that wouldn't fall into what you were paid to do?
On that Amateur Sports Commission board, if I can comment on that briefly, that was a six-year stint, if you will. Mm-hmm. Our chair was Tom Duffy, a retired IBM executive.
Who many of us know.
I was going to say, I don't know if you know him or if you've ever had a chair of a board run by a retired IBM executive.
Paul and I are laughing. We both know him.
Let's say the trains run on time, shall we say, if that's in that case. So that was truly a board experience to work on that and to develop those facilities statewide. We did it throughout the state. We had debates. at times over where the location should be. One of the big debates we had was where we should put the aquatic center, and of course we worked out a resolution with the University of Minnesota to help fund the aquatic center, which has now had just terrific success from everything I know. And so it was a great, great experience serving on there with other business and corporate people. In addition to that, I, of course, have served as in my leadership capacity in government and on the finance committees and the conference committees. And I did that routinely over year after year after year, where we're not just limited to our constituencies. We've got constitutional deadlines. We have the potential for shutting down the government. I've been through that both at the state and federal level. And what it's taken in all those instances is much, I would say, of what is involved in board work. It's working to get the job done, providing leadership, getting buy-in from everyone, doing many of the same things that we did on the Amateur Sports Commission and that I see in the business work that I've done, legal and business work that I've done over the years. So in terms of looking at other particular corporate boards, no, I would have to say that it's the Amateur Sports Commission and then all of my work in government.
Okay. Follow up to that.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for putting your name in. I do appreciate your service, and I'm pleased that you've done that. With regard to the Amateur Sports Commission, I understand from your references you were one of the founders and very active in starting that. When you were on the commission itself or the board, was that a legislative appointment?
Yes. That there was a We founded that in order to conduct the or to build the facilities, and I'm sure that there was a board that was set up that required that provided maybe similar to your council, where it gives a number of appointees to the House, Senate, and perhaps the governor as well. But it was the appointment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Chair, because we still I think do put based on that we still do put. Senators on that commission.
Yeah. I think it's been a very successful volleyball facility there. We've got our different facilities throughout the state, and I think it's been a very successful effort. Thanks.
We appreciate it very much, not only that facility, but what our Amateur Sports Commission does to bring events to the state of Minnesota and, of course, specifically Rochester. And we've got a big banquet again at the end of the month and sold out 500 people again, where we recognize different both individuals and teams. So appreciate all the work that you did leading up to that. Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Luther, thank you for being here. You mentioned a little bit earlier when you talked about diversity and the issues relating to tuition. The university, in cooperation with the legislature, has been able to hold tuition flat for the last couple of years and intend to do that again. But in the long term, I'm concerned whether this would be a long-term solution to rising tuition. I'd like your opinions or ideas about how else can the university raise funds or revenues in order to run the operation.
Yeah, well that's, I have the same concern because the one thing that we found in the GAO study that we had put together in the 90s, actually, so that would be 20 years ago now, is that while tuition had gone up based on the dropping of state support, actually it had gone up more than the drop in the state support, indicating that the cost of delivering the education was also creating pressure on tuition. And so we obviously are all aware of how the university now has the budget has increased considerably. There's been criticism of it. The university is now proposing a number, $90 million over 6 years in cost reductions. I assume And if I do have the opportunity to serve on the Board of Regents, that will be a major issue, because I don't think we can expect the legislature to continue to increase as much as we'd like. We're going to have to look at internal efficiencies. I know that one of the first things to be thrown out is going to, is probably going to be that, just based on my experience in the legislature, that $15 million for repair and maintenance that they've included in their budget, when in fact that might be one of the most important things. So I think that we're going to have to look probably harder internally. But I believe the costs are, administrative costs of the operating budget are still about 29%, even in the budget proposed this time. The 10% increase in the budget is probably, it's going to be scrutinized very carefully. Why don't we say that? That's probably the best. So I have the same concerns as you. We're going to have to, at the university, take a real hard look at a lot of the expenditures.
Thank you.
Good. Pat.
Mr. Chair. Former Congressman Luther, thank you for coming. Thank you for applying. Thank you for your years of service. Very, very impressive. Could you tell me, I have a couple questions. The first one is just a very lead-in. There's no right or wrong answer. Could you tell me just a little bit about the family farm? I don't need to know all the details, but what happened to it today?
You wouldn't want all the details.
I'm running one today, and sometimes the details are best left unsaid. But I understand, as you said, a couple of your siblings got economics degrees, which is my background, and then eventually became lawyers and a medical doctor. Wow. What a crop off that farm. Unfortunately, that's often what happens, is the crop is the kids, and oftentimes the lead. Is that what happened to your family?
That's exactly it. My parents' focus was on education. We owned just a quarter section, 160 acres, but when we were growing up, in order to make it go, we farmed a full 400 acres, which meant there wasn't much free time for anything else. It was a dairy farm, Holsteins. We had milked about 35 Holsteins morning and night, and basically raised the crops to feed the cattle, but we had some cash crops. I think one year my dad made the point to me that he used his whole cash crop for my tuition at the University of Maryland. So he wanted me to study hard, okay?
Corn was not over $10 a bushel then, was it?
That's right.
Although if we compare credit hours to bushel,
but it's exciting to see some of the things that are happening in greater Minnesota. Even in my hometown, there's a proposal now to provide multi-use for the old state hospital facility. It's called the Kirkbride proposal. It's just exciting to go back and see that and to be supportive of that. And I want to see the university play a role in helping in greater Minnesota. I mean, let's be candid. A lot of people think of the university as a metro resource. They shouldn't, despite our five campuses, and I've certainly been on all of them. But we need to make sure that we change both that perception and that reality, so that the University of Minnesota is, and especially true in the internet age we're in and how things are changing, we need the University of Minnesota to be present, to be helpful out, keeping our young people out in our beautiful greater Minnesota, helping the economies of our local communities.
Thank you. If I could follow up with another question. Very eloquent, very good answer. Thank you. You are a good communicator, and that is coming through. I would like you to comment, though, on your understanding of how the various pieces of our higher education systems interact and contribute to each other, namely MinSCU, the 2 and 4 year systems, the university and private colleges, and what you see their roles are, and if you have an idea of change or anything happening with those roles.
Well, I think a lot more. We've always taken pride in having kind of a three-legged stool, if you will, the University of Minnesota, the MinSCU, and then the private colleges, and they've all played such an important role. I mean, I've generally viewed it from the approach of access, because I think anytime you have multiple sources of entry, you're improving and you're helping access into the system. Now, I think what we can do is try to make sure there's more cooperation and more coordination between the three legs to the stool, if you will. And I think there are some who think that, you know, the university needs to pull back on some of the undergraduate to provide opportunities. I think some of those proposals are very controversial, and I want to, as the one thing I want to do as a member of the Board of Regents is to learn a lot more about them before I would suggest making any major change. Right now, I like having a system where we have multiple areas of entry, and because the students who excel at all parts of that system then, of course, then come to the University of Minnesota for their graduate work. But I agree we need more coordination and cooperation.
Yeah. Harriet?
Sure. And I did not thank you this morning, but I want to do that now for all of your service. You have a very distinguished career and have certainly are an exciting candidate to talk with this morning. As you prepared for this interview, and you've focused a lot on the University of Minnesota, which is the purpose of this, have you done anything to understand the greater higher education landscape in the United States and beyond the United States and the issues that are being faced there? And if so, could you comment on anything that might be of concern or that you just have thoughts on?
Well, I try to stay on top of reading and keeping abreast of different issues. One issue that concerns me is when I see that the United States itself is not the kind of destination for higher learning that it once was, that students around the world are in increasing numbers going to other countries rather than the United States for their higher education. And I thought, well, you know, that's an interesting trend and certainly something that we wouldn't necessarily expect and something we probably need to take a real hard look at. Obviously, the other trends that are going on and ones the board is going to have to be very, very aware of is just the influence of the Internet and the different forms of learning and how higher ed now seems to be more directed at the rather than the institution. It's becoming, just like a lot of things, it's becoming more directed by the individual recipient of the education. And so programming, education, and figuring out how we can deliver on a mass basis the kind of quality education we've traditionally done in the classroom is a big challenge. And I've seen all the indications of the different trials of different approaches. So, yes, I do follow the open loop and all the different concepts, which I'm sure you're very, very aware of it. And certainly on the board, I know that when President Kaler made his presentation in Washington recently this past summer, I know he made reference to the university being on the cutting edge of some of those issues. And so I'm very much looking forward to if I'm selected to serve on the board, to getting into more detail on what those trends are.
Thank you.
And Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question. I'd just like to make a statement. Number one, I want to thank Mr. Luther, who I've known for some 40 years. I do know Bill Luther, and he is like Jack Kennedy, so I can say that. Long a distinguished career of public service, which we all should thank him for. And I want to also say, too, as I did with one other candidate here that has in their background wonderful legislative experience and contribution to Minnesota here, that if Bill Luther is selected to serve as a regent, he would be among the best we've ever had. And that is my view. So I want to thank him for that and tell him that, put that on the record.
Thank you. Lois.
Mr. Lee, Luther, I would like to apologize for the fact that I'm less than fully up to snuff at the present time.
Yes.
Me too.
Yes.
You referenced in your exchange with Mr. Duncanson about the crop that came off the farm and the freedom that you were given by your parents to pursue what was right for you. And then you've talked about the critical importance of access. As you discussed the financing piece, I believe I caught your reference to the fact that there are price pressures in the cost of delivery of education. So my question is, how does the Minnesota State Grant Fund, which provides the full freedom to the students to go to any one of those three bodies of education institutions, the university, the Minscu system, or the state private colleges, how does the freedom of access that the state grant fund gives fit into, in your mind, the funding structure and the revenue sources of an ever-increasing higher education delivery cost?
Well, I guess that is the $64,000 question, probably, that we're all facing throughout the country. We're facing this program in Minnesota. Other states are facing their programs. The argument, of course, goes that we can continue to allow tuition to increase as long as we've got that funding program, that grant program for people in need. Of course, I know that that everyone who needs it isn't accessing it, and it's not probably as accessible as we would like it to be. So I think that's one problem. I think the concept behind it is very good, but I think it does have to be teamed up with tuition control, because I just don't think we can completely rely on that. I don't want to come to any complete conclusions on it until I have the benefit of all of the information that I obviously would have serving, because that's the way I'd want to approach my service on the board. But I think I know the arguments on both sides of that. I think it can serve a lot of students well, but I think when it comes to the whole issue of access and affordability, I do think we need that tuition control piece as well.
There was reference in previous candidate discussion to addressing the revenue side of the spectrum, sans tuition, in the funding of growth at the university. How do you think about that piece?
Well, obviously, the traditional sources have been the revenue. In fact, I'm sure a lot of you saw the follow-up GAO report that came out just 2-3 weeks ago, saying that now we're to the point where state support is exceeding tuition in terms of money for colleges in the country. So, and that's the first time that's happened. It's obviously a mix of the tuition and the state subsidy. Now, should the university look at other possible sources? We've got, obviously, the research, but we know that when you have research grants, you've got other issues. If you're going to receive research money, then you've got to receive it right. We've got to make sure there's transparency and so that we're not compromising our academic standards. So, obviously, I think we're going to have to look at all kinds of alternatives, probably, in order to face this, because having come from the legislature years ago, I know that, and I'm sure that it's still the case there, that they're not going to just receive that 10% increase proposed budget that's being sent over and just say, oh, yes, we're going to sign off on it. That just is not going to happen. So I'll let her speak to that. So I just think that we've got to look at all possibilities.
Good. Margaret.
almost $4 billion a year budget, 40% of it to medical, academic health care.
Excuse me.
What's your current background in health care issues, and what do you see as the mega issues coming down the line for the University of Minnesota?
Sure. Well, in terms of background, obviously I've followed the healthcare issue as a member of that committee in Washington, and of course all the healthcare issues in Minnesota. I've made mention of some of those issues. Personally, of course, on a personal level, my sister was medical doctor at HCMC for many years, my wife, Darlene, I spent literally months at the Mayo Clinic with her illness. So I have some personal familiarity with the healthcare system, and then also my familiarity from having served in the legislature and then on the key committee in Congress. I'll just mention a couple of the issues that I think are really important. Is that I think the university, well, first of all, the merger, that merger has been going on for about 17 years, I think, with Fairview. I think there's still some loose ends that need to be tied up on that, and I think that that would be an issue for the university to get that, all of that authority clarified and resolved. So that would be one issue. Another issue would simply be assisting in Greater Minnesota with the needs, particularly healthcare practitioners and professionals in Greater Minnesota. I think there's a big need, and that we should do what we can to help local communities, and I think the University of Minnesota can play a very strong role in that effort.
Pretty good. Harriet?
As we went through your references, it was very difficult to find any weaknesses. I'm going to turn that table a little bit and ask you, what do you consider to be a weakness that you would like to improve in yourself?
I don't have to think about that long. My family's here to vouch for it. But I have a workaholic tendency that... And I think it comes from the work on the farm, quite frankly. You know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this and analyzing it. But when you are raised that way, where you can never leave for anything, because the cows have to be milked in the morning and they've got to be milked 10 hours later in the evening. And when you have to farm that way without the equipment they have today, we were plowing with 2 16s behind a B or a 530 back then. When you live that way, you have to be productive in your work. You have to get things done. Now, as you get along, you work at different approaches to deal with it. And I think my family thinks I'm working on dealing with it. But I'd say that but again, I used the word work, didn't I? But I think I'm making good progress on it, but I think that that's a continual challenge. It just plain it is, and it's hard, pretty hardwired.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kathy.
Okay, she stole my question, but I'll come up with another one. You have a great record of service and a strong personality and leadership style. How do you see your particular style working with the Board of Regents when there's divisive issues where you might not be in the majority? How do you work that through so that you can get to the best resolution for the university?
Well, that's a terrific question. I just look at the divisive issues I guess that I've been involved in my life. I'm a believer that you don't kick the can down the road. You deal with tough issues. And you don't push them off. And when it was the Dayton, the takeover of the Dayton's department store, I'm the one that had the bill, worked on that, worked with all of the stakeholders. We all worked together. We found a resolution of it that would work for everybody. When it came to the Northwest Airlines issue, huge issue in 91. That was about as contested as any that I recall, the pro and the con of whether we should build those facilities in the 8th District. And Gene Merriam, who I think we all know, you maybe read the application or my application because I quoted him in that application, because he was so well respected on both sides of the aisle, Republican, Democrat, whatever. But he was quoted in the newspaper as follows. He said, "We could have argued about it forever. Instead, Bill found an orderly way for us to carefully look at it." It was quintessential Luther. I don't know about that, but that's what he said. And, you know, I appreciated that because when you work on those hard issues, oftentimes you're trying to make sure that you aren't getting any credit. You want buy-in from everybody. You want this to be a win-win solution for everyone. And the same was true out in Washington. We had a huge issue over the Firestone tires. Maybe some of you remember, about the year 2000, Ford Explorers all over the country had Firestone tires that had to be recalled. And, of course, the manufacturers said, well, that's fine, we'll recall them, but we want to be able to provide the replacement tires. We don't want you just going any place. Well, of course, there were cars all over the country idled because of that. Nobody would drive on those particular tires. And so I worked with all the players, John Dingell and others, to get a solution to that so that we could get everyone's tires on and they'd be able to then send the bill in to Firestone. Not if Firestone could reasonably provide them. If they could provide them, fine. But if they couldn't, then we couldn't have people in this country scared to drive on their cars. We couldn't afford to have all those idle cars for months. And we got that in the bill, passed it, got it signed by the president. I remember I got the pen for the signing, so I remember that. You know, he hands out a lot of them, so it's no big deal. but basically got the provision done. So issue after issue, if you work, and I'm doing the same thing today in the mediation center, Justice Gilbert's mediation center. If you work hard enough and you get buy-in and you develop rapport and you do all those kinds of things, you can resolve some awfully big issues, and you can do it in a way, a very collegial, constructive way.
Yep. Thank you. Mr. Luther, it's time for your closing statement.
Thank you. This has been just a wonderful opportunity, so thank you very much. I'll make sure this is very brief because we probably already run over. I just wanted to say that in my life, I've worked with my parents on the farm. I've worked as a lawyer, a business owner, a mediator, a consultant. For a period of time, I committed myself to public service for the public good in this state. That was many years ago. I've been out of public service now for about 13 years, 12 or 13 years, depending on how you count it. And with that breadth of experience, I would like to work for the University of Minnesota, and I would hope that you would consider me for a position on the Board of Regents. And finally, I would say that over the years, I can't tell you how many times I've been asked about why Minnesota is so unique. Why do we have all those Fortune 500 companies? Why is our economy always doing a little better than the country's? Why do we have caring people wanting to build a community rather than just looking out for yourself all the time? And all of the work that I've done over the years, it leads me to the conclusion that a good part of it is due to this land-grant university we have, the University of Minnesota. And for all of the work that it's done and the research and the spin-offs and just what it's given our state. And so that's why the work that you're doing here is so important and why I thank you for your service in doing what you're doing today. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And Janet, thank you for being here as well.